This Human Capital podcast is brought to you by GoalSpan, a performance app that helps you manage feedback and goals, run reviews and surveys, and align your workforce around what's most important. Our AI-driven performance management insights help anticipate trends, celebrate peak performance, and get employee-specific coaching guidance for one-to-one meetings. GoalSpan ensures your data privacy with responsible AI. To learn more, go to GoalSpan.com. Welcome to the Human Capital Podcast. I'm Jeff Hunt. Are you the type of leader who makes people feel seen and heard and valued? And if you are, what strategies do you use to show up in this way? On the contrary, have you ever worked for a leader where the only thing they seem to care about in you is what you produce? Of course, that's a bad feeling. But what makes the difference between leaders who inspire and those who simply manage? Leading and managing people today is more difficult in most organizations than it ever has been. Leaders are under unprecedented pressure. They're expected to constantly drive results, manage change, and keep their teams engaged while navigating increasing complexities in an incredibly fast-changing landscape. But what if the key to being a truly effective leader isn't about pushing harder, but about becoming more present, mindful, and self-aware? Today, my guest is Dr. Karen Suk, and she believes that mindful leadership is the secret to unlocking engagement, innovation, and resilience in the workplace. Karen is the founder and CEO of Wisdom to Lead, a consulting firm that helps executives and organizations cultivate conscious leadership through mindfulness. She's also the author of Mindfully Wise Leadership, The Secret of Today's Leaders, and she spent over 20 years working with global companies like Checkpoint Software, Verint Systems, and Siemens, helping them embrace a more people-centered, emotionally intelligent approach to leadership. In our conversation today, we're going to explore what mindful leadership really means, why it's essential today, and how leaders can integrate mindfulness into their daily routines, not just as a personal practice, but as a way to transform their teams and organizations. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. This is a topic I'm passionate about. We've talked a lot on the show about mindfulness and mindfulness-based leadership. And I actually want to start us out by asking you, as you're coming on the show today, Karen, how mindfully present are you feeling?
Actually, right now I'm present. I meditated before a little bit, and I was asking myself if I'm in the right mood to be a guest on the show today, but I decided I am present right now.
Lucky for me.
For me.
So as we get started, I'm curious about what initially inspired you to explore this connection between mindfulness and leadership.
So it first of all began by my own journey to mindful leadership over 20 years ago when I went through a transformation myself and increased my self-awareness, my connection to myself and my presence. So I'm on this journey still, and I think we're always on this journey, right? And this is on my personal level. On my professional level, as you said, I'm working with the companies and leaders for more than 20 years. And I always felt that, as you said in the beginning, in the introduction, that there's a little bit of abuse in the workplace, that they don't really see the employees and they see them as instrumental to bring the increase the ROI. And part of one of my projects with my clients, I went to the library in the university and found an article dealing with this issue. And this led me, and I always felt like I need to bring like a new knowledge to the workplace. And this led me to do my PhD, and my PhD was about leadership in the 21st century. My main question was, what is the role of leaders nowadays in leading financial successful organizations alongside motivating their employees for meaningfulness, intrinsic motivation in order to help them fulfill themselves and for the organization to be creative and innovative? And in my research, I found that the mindfulness and consciousness is a crucial element that we need to embrace nowadays in order to lead in this new workplaces and new reality. And then, you know, I started there. And then I was invited to teach in Poly U University in Hong Kong. They opened a master degree called Executive Meaningful Innovative Leadership. And they actually opened a 30-hour component of mindfulness. And I was invited to teach there. And then for me, all the dots were connected because I understood that this will be the tools I will bring to organizations and leaders in order to help them navigate in this time and create engaging workplaces and great better cultures.
Yeah, what a wonderful journey. And it's making me think about what the misconceptions are around mindfulness in the workplace, especially. And I think many leaders equate mindfulness to slowing down, and yet they feel this pressure to move faster and to be decisive. And so I'm curious about how you reconcile these two perspectives.
First of all, I agree with you. They see it's like counterintuitive. It looks like we don't have time to pause right now. We need to be in this meeting and to act really quickly and to do and to do. However, when I work with leaders and managers, I first of all show them the research that shows that there are more than 6,000 published scientific studies that show that mindfulness increases our health, our well-being, and create the neural agility that we all need in order to be relevant, right? And to adopt new behaviors and let go of behaviors that doesn't serve us anymore. And beyond this, you know, I help them to pause and to show them that by pausing and being present, it increases our productivity, our attention, our focus. So it's like, it's counterintuitive, but at the end of the day, you don't need to meditate like for 30 minutes. You can have a pause for 5 minutes or go out to nature around the building and take a few deep breaths and come back much more focused and fresh to the new meeting you encounter. So this is, you know, the method that we need to work with and to show them the opposite of it. And beside this, I think that also mindfulness, it's like we see it as a meditation practice only, and it's not. At the end of the day, the meditation is, I see it as a tool. The Buddhism was like me, but this is how I was, because I also an instrumental person. By embracing the meditation, we actually are able to increase our self-awareness. And this is the crucial element that we need to embrace nowadays and to create the space between the stimulation and the response and then choose freely our behavior instead of being active upon our triggers, our emotions. And then actually we don't have a free choice to navigate our companies, our employees, ourselves into the place that we want to. So, you know, I showed them the importance of actually pausing. And in my research, I found that the main tension that we need to embrace nowadays is the tension between the doing mode and the being mode. Because as leaders, we learn that we need to be busy and all day long be in a doing mode. But actually what we need to nourish nowadays is the ability to pause, to reflect, to listen and act from this place. And then we'll be much more productive and efficient.
I'm actually just reflecting as you're sharing that about how mindfulness, it seems like it can help us better prioritize what's important as well. And not only prioritize what's important, but if we're truly mindful, understand what maybe we shouldn't be working on anymore versus being filled with anxiety and not being present and constantly being either in the future or in the past, and then just doing everything, even though it may not be producing the result that we're looking for. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
I agree with you, because as we are more mindful and listening to our own sensations and emotions and to our intuition, it tells us something. So even working on a project that I feel really stressed about it and I don't feel comfortable about it, as a manager, as an individual, I need to stop and ask myself these questions. Why am I feeling this way? What does it come to tell me this feeling? Maybe it's not my job to do and I need to delegate it to my employees. And instead of it, I'm taking on myself and I'm getting burned out and it's not productive. So by increasing our mindfulness and self-awareness, we can work with our internal world and make better decisions and decide. And part of being mindful and increase our self-awareness is the ability to learn to say, to put boundaries, right?
Yes.
And I think a lot of managers are struggling with it, to put boundaries and to be demanding, because if I'm demanding, so I won't be nice to my employee. But this is what I found in my research, that the second thing that we need to embrace is the ability to hold the tensions, right? Between the employee needs and the organization needs, between speed and quality, between myself and my employees. So being able to be in the uncertain and not close the space and invite this tension and allow the time to for the solution to for the right solution to emerge. And for this, we really need to nourish our presence and to be comfortable with not knowing the answer. And this is also a challenge that a lot of managers are struggling, because we learned that as the CEO, as the managers, we need to have all the answers and to know where we're going, and not always we know all the answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it appears that in most organizations, the leader that is vulnerable and willing to admit that they don't have the answer actually garners more respect than the leader who always has to have the answer and then many times is not right or not collaborative with their teams, right?
Sure, because at the end of the day, people appreciate authentic people and leaders. At the end of the day, we're all human beings, right? And we want to be seen. And if I'm struggling now, so my manager would see me and will be with me in this space. And even the fact that, yes, the manager say, I don't know the answer. What do you think about it? And it gives space to other voices. It also enables other people to be vulnerable and to bring themselves fully. And from this space and holding this space, the right solution can emerge. And I usually advise the managers I'm working with, when you're coming to a meeting and you need to think about a structure, pivot a product or a service, give it time. Even say in the beginning of the meeting, we don't need to get to the solution at the end of the meeting. Only by creating the space, in a paradoxical way, there's a big chance that you will get to the solution. But create a space to not know the answer, to not get to the solution right away. So it's a lot of about creating the space, yeah.
Sure. It's learning how to be comfortable in the uncomfortable, right?
And this is really challenging because they don't like it, right?
No. People hate that tension generally. Yeah, very true.
You know why we don't like to be vulnerable? Because then they can see me. They can see that I'm not perfect, that I'm not showing the coherent identity. But at the end of the day, people really appreciate it. I can say from my personal experience, I'm leading retreats for managers. And in one of the retreats, I went through a really tough time in my personal life. And you know, at the meditation, when I led the meditation, I started crying. And then the meditation ended and I was the facilitator. I needed to start the session, but I couldn't because my throat was choking.
Yes.
And I let it be. I didn't fight with it. And then there was a moment that one of the participants asked me, do you want a hug? And I said, yes. And we hugged in the middle of the circle of the group. And you know, at the end of the retreat, the feedback was that it was really inspiring for them because I, as the manager, as the leader of the retreat, enabled myself to be vulnerable. So it gave them the space to show up fully and to be vulnerable. So I really believe it's challenging to be in this place, but this is the way you legitimize for others to be present as well.
Yeah, that's a powerful example. And it feels as though your vulnerability allowed others to open up their compassion for you as a person, rather than being in this place where we're disconnected. And so that seems like a very powerful example you just shared with us, for sure. Yeah.
Thanks. It was a powerful moment.
Yeah. I'm curious about how you work with your clients to sort of achieve transformation. So if I give you a scenario, you know, you fly on the wall, there's an organization that is filled with anxiety and a lack of presence and in being able to be with people with this patient approach you just described. And so there might be stressful conversations and over busyness and maybe misfocus on things that are not truly meaningful and important. If you enter into this type of environment, what does it look like to move them from that space to one where not only leaders, but all people within the organization can really understand mindfulness, embrace it, and leverage it to change the way they live and work?
No, actually, what I do in the organization, I start with a exposure lecture that I talk about the connection between consciousness and leadership, and I show them data and what I talked before, and I lead them through a one meditation to experience it, because at the end of the day, it's an experience, right? We can only understand it rationally. Because I'm working with mainly with the high-tech sector and the rational people, I bring it from the data, you know, because we want to see that it is validation. But then we go through the experience, and then we'll see the benefit. And usually afterwards, I will offer, I will offer a conscious leadership course, like up to 15 managers to participate in the course. And in this course, I lead them through different kinds of meditations, different things like mindful communication, how we can bring ourselves and communicate only also from our mind, but also from our heart, how to create difficult conversations, how to lead from a compassion place. But what I do in this course is, it's transformative because we also meditate. So it's create a space of not judgmental and being present. So, you know, it increases their presence automatically. But I also give them an exercise to look within themselves. Like we have an exercise about getting out of automatic behavior, right? So each and every one needs to see one automatic behavior that doesn't serve him anymore. And then we meditate on it, we play with it, and then we sit in pairs and we talk about how we can change it tomorrow morning. And they're going through a process because at the end of each session, they take something to be aware of during the week. And we start with a reflection. So it occurs during the meetings and they're really going through a transformation. And it's amazing. One of the courses, one of the companies I had, I led like 4 courses. And in the 3rd course, we touched about on the theme of mindful communication, how to be vulnerable, how to be authentic, I invite them to connect to their different emotions and to give them place and not close this place. And at the end of the course, one of the manager shared with the group really something really very, very intimate about her life. And they were working like 20 years together and they didn't know it about each other. And, you know, she shared something really hard, really unpleasant from her personal life. And, you know, at the end of the session, I went home and I said, okay, I hope I didn't do damage because I'm not a psychologist. I know I didn't be in the space, but I hope it will be okay. And the meeting afterwards, she came to the session and she told us, wow, you know, it was really difficult for me because usually I deny this feeling and you invited to give it place and I gave it place and it actually transformed in my body. And I woke up and I was so happy. And it was, wow, you know, it was so touching. And I understood that all the group, like hold the space for her to be present and to be vulnerable. And after this session, they also got tools to communicate differently from a really emotional place. But they also connected from a so deep place that there was nothing that they couldn't achieve afterwards because they were connected from a compassion place and a really human place. And this is the transformation. And then they went to the CEO and told them, look, it changes our lives. It created a new language. We want to have more courses and to have it more in our company. So, you know, we opened another course. So if you're asking what I'm doing differently, I'm really inviting them to a space and to connect to themselves, to understand their internal wound, what they are feeling right now, and not to close it and not to be judgmental. And by bringing myself authentic and vulnerable and creating the psychology safety, and I believe you will agree with me that this is what's needed nowadays, mostly the psychology safety, right?
100%. Yeah. A lack of psychological safety ends up leading to a lot of disconnection, resentment, misunderstandings, not being seen and heard, a lack of collaboration, and all of those things produce lower results, less productive results. And it's not only financially, but it's culturally within an organization. So I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm also just thinking about what you shared and how you're building a bridge in relationships. You're helping people create connections that they didn't have before. And that connection and engagement is also what can lead to higher performance. So oftentimes you have people in the C-suite may say, this is too touchy-feely. This is not going to have a financial result for our organization. Why should we invest in this? But just going back to your example, if somebody has shared something about themselves and I've been working alongside them for 20 years and it's something very vulnerable, and now I know that person better and I can tap into some compassion, if they, I will go a lot further for them than I might have previously because I care about them and I understand them better versus not. And I'm curious if you think that's an accurate reflection.
Sure, I couldn't agree more. Because at the end of the day, when we have trust, you know, at the end of the day, the crucial element that we need nowadays in order to lead is trust, right?
Yeah.
To trust each other and to be vulnerable and to accept each other as we are. And then when we see each other as human beings, so it's okay. So we can deal with this. And I don't see like he's abusing me or using me for his interest. We can speak about this disagreements and find the agreement by only listening to what's really important for him and what's really important for me and to prioritize what we need right now in order to achieve our goals together. So, you know, I give them also tools to be able to be in difficult conversations because it's also part of the process, right? It's not only touchy feeling and be, I think part of the touchy feeling, what happened in the workplaces, also in the Western world, we learn to disconnect from our emotions because we are afraid it will flood us. We are afraid it will decrease the ROI. But what's happening then, because we disconnect and push it in our body, at the end of the day, the emotions are manage us, right? Because if I'm stressed, at the end of the day, I only shout at my colleague. But if I will be aware that I'm stressed out right now and I'm feeling anger about this person or about the situation, I have a free choice what to do with my anger. I can speak about my anger. I can take 10 minutes break. I can find another person that will help me to talk about it. So I have much more option and choose freely my behavior and then I will achieve my goal versus the way that I won't connect to my emotions. But at the end of the day, I will act upon my emotion. And this is the counterintuitive that people don't understand that even if you are disconnected from your emotion, it doesn't mean that it doesn't manage you. It manages you even more.
Yes.
So I think this is the mindfulness tool that we're bringing to the organizations nowadays is to help people connect fully to their full experience as human being and include the emotions because at the end of the day, the traits that are connected to our heart are traits that we need nowadays. It's compassion, passion, creativity, right? And so we need to learn to work with the emotion to manage them, definitely to manage them.
Exactly.
And you know, once I see my employee struggling with unpleasant feeling, I can be there for him because if I can contain my own emotions, no way I would be able to be there for my employees, for my colleagues, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So true. I want to just highlight something that you said around the importance for people to understand that high performance and mindfulness can live together and that when a leader needs to confront an employee for underperforming, it's simply addressing that underperformance in a healthier way. So I can be with that employee and speak very clearly and directly, but do it from a place of mindfulness versus doing it from a place of anxiety or not being as present or not genuinely not caring about the person as much, correct? So those conversations end up being more healthy, right?
Sure. And you know what I learned along the journey? That actually confronting your employee or your spouse or whatever and putting boundaries and giving him the feedback, it's a compassionate thing because
yes.
You really help them to change his behavior and to be a better employee. But if you don't confront him, so he won't be a better employee and you don't help him. So, you know, this is something I had an epiphany, a moment of epiphany, because actually, if you're not doing it, you're not caring and you're not loving and not compassionate. And you can do it from a compassionate place. You don't need to be tough and only showing the bad thing. You can show them how it can serve them. But this is actually goes exactly together. And once you're more compassionate, he will feel seen and he will want to embrace it and to change himself in order to be a better employee. So it's a win-win situation. And then it will increase their productivity, right?
No question. So there may be some listeners, Karen, that are not leaders or managers and maybe in an environment where they're working with a colleague, a peer, or a manager that is not mindfully present, somebody that is coming in and with a lot of energy and anxiety and maybe that's very reactive instead of proactive. And I'm wondering what tips and strategies you may have for them in that situation. How can they develop their own mindfulness to show up in a different way?
First of all, if they know in advance that he's really energetic and they don't feel comfortable in his presence, I think I would invite them to take a few minutes before this session and become present to the session. Like, then they'll be less reactive and more responsive. And, you know, even speak their uncomfortable feelings, like say, you know, I will really be happy to listen and to go forward, but I feel really stressful from this conversation. Can we do it in a different location or in a different volume or something? I don't feel comfortable. Like, being brave enough to talk their own experience and put a boundaries from a respectful place toward themselves. And once they will respect themselves, others will respect them also. And again, it comes mindfulness, the mindfulness piece starts within ourselves. So they really need to connect to their own experience and sometimes talk it and put their own boundaries. And, you know, if they're starting to talk loudly, maybe say, okay, I don't feel comfortable with this tone. Can we lower this tone and do it more relaxed? So like walking with it, in a pleasant way, not responding in an aggressive way, because if they will speak their colleagues in a language, they won't succeed. They need to bring their own flavor and their own presence and talk it really in a way that the other colleague can embrace it as well.
Yeah, that's a great approach. And so when we think about organizations and the trying to implement some of these mindfulness-based practices, how can they implement this so that they're truly transformative instead of becoming some sort of a event-based initiative that we're checking the box and then we're moving on and then quickly slipping back into our old ways?
You know, at the end of the day, I really believe that we need to not put it hands-on, but to embed it in the culture, right? As the leader, we act from this place, so it will resonate to the organizations and to the people. So I was invited to do a work with the management team to increase their presence and to increase their self-awareness and the ability to communicate better. And then the impact will be highly on the culture and the people. So it's starting by behavior that they show, how they show up to the meetings and to the communications. And then they can implement it by, you know, even opening a meeting by checkup, like asking each and every one of the employees between 1 to 10, how present are you now? Like you said to me at the beginning of this podcast, right? So this is a small tool that you can use in order to invite people to be more present. And if you see that everyone needs more 5 more minutes to finish up things and come more present, maybe give them this 5 more minutes. And you can offer mindfulness courses, conscious leadership courses for the employees to really transform the people. So once they will transform the managers and the leaders, it will be like a ripple effect. It will affect the way they will act toward their employees and their employees will act toward their colleagues. So it's going really deeper. And then you can offer also meditations and classes. But usually what happens when organization managers hear about mindfulness, it's connected to well-being. Okay, let's do a meditation class and finish with it. It's not there, right? It's going to the essence of the culture and essence of our behavior and increasing our self-awareness and the way we act in the day-to-day and being present.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So one more question before we switch into some lightning round questions. And we haven't talked much about resilience, but I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how mindfulness and resilience go hand in hand.
So mindfulness and resilience go hand in hand directly, because as you increase your presence, you know, there's a lot of winds of change and anxiety and stress. But once you find your anchor and you're present and you're grounded, if there's stress, you can handle it better. The fact that you are acting stressful in a stressful way doesn't make you more productive. You only act in a reactive way. So you don't have the ability to navigate and choose freely the way you want to act. So by practicing even the meditation 5 minutes a day, it increases your presence and the ability to contain the unpleasant situations and to choose from a different place. So I see directly the connection, and it helps you to contain difficult emotions and difficult situations and to be present. You know, at the end of the day, what I say in my courses, that we want to be in meditation each and every moment in our life, right? Because we want to be present each and every moment in our lives.
That's right.
So we want to embrace it in the day-to-day, not only in the sitting practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in order to do that, it seems like you really have to make it habitual. So that your sitting practice needs to be regular, and then it will spill over into the rest of your life in terms of being able to be more mindful, correct?
Sure. You need to find a routine to find the time in the day that it works for you, even 5 minutes a day, but do it continuously every day. Mm-hmm. And then you can, the results, yeah, it can be one time thing. It doesn't work like this.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes. Okay, I'm going to ask you some lightning round questions, and these are very quick and easy. And the first one is, what are you most grateful for?
For my life, for my journey, for my transformation.
What is the most difficult leadership lesson you've learned over your career?
That you need to see the people. Once I taught in a university, and I was so referring to the theoretical materials that I didn't see the students within the beginning of my career. So
mm-hmm.
To see the people, it's more important than seeing the materials.
That's a tremendous piece of wisdom right there that almost encapsulates this episode, like in that one little lesson that you learned. So thank you for sharing that. Who is one person you would interview if you could, living or not?
Nelson Mandela.
And what's your top book recommendation? Do you have a book for our listeners you'd like to recommend other than your Wisdom to Lead book?
I love the When Kings Fall Apart of Pema Chodorow. It's my Bible. When I read it once in a while and go deeper. Also, The Present of Now of Eckhart Tolle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of books.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Wow, just a minute. Be vulnerable. Be authentic. Be yourself. Be yourself is the best piece of advice I've received.
Mm,
it's challenging, although, but be yourself.
It is, yes. Karen, you've given us so much incredible wisdom today. I'm wanting you to summarize our talk with kind of the one or two most important takeaways to leave our listeners with.
So first of all, I really invite people to find the way that works for them to pause. There's a lot of techniques and the ways to meditate. It can be walking meditation, going to nature. Find what works for you and what you feel good about it and implement it. Because if it won't work for you, you won't do it. And put it as part of your routine and be compassionate toward yourself. I think this is important because we're really tough with ourselves and it starts within ourselves. Once we'll be compassionate toward ourselves, we can be more compassionate toward others. And this is also a challenging thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
From experience.
Yes. And lastly, where can people find you? They're interested in learning more.
They can find me in my website, www.wisdomtolead.co, or on LinkedIn, Dr. Karen Suk.
Dr. Karen Suk, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Human Capital. If you like this show, please tell your friends and also take the time to go rate and review us. Human Capital is a production of Goalspan, your integrated source for performance management. Now go out and be the inspiration to other humans, and thank you for being human, kind.